And it's another week. This is Andrew Wood, Executive Director, Hope Resource Center. Thank you so much for tuning in. You can learn more about Hope at investinghope.com. You can find us on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, all of those places. Or in the months of January and February of this year, you can find me in a church, maybe your church. I've been every single Sunday at a different church speaking about life and hope, and I'll be at two more churches this weekend as I join Seventh-day Christian Assembly on Saturday, and then I will be at Calvary Baptist on Kingston Pike on Sunday morning, and I'll both of those places I will be providing the message. And so those pastors have been gracious enough to allow me the time, and so we're going to be good stewards of that time as we discuss life, hope, and of course, the gospel, the text that I'm going to be in, that I've been in this whole sanctity of life period this year has been Matthew 14, when Jesus walks on water, and then ultimately when Peter walks on water. And what we discuss there is how we have been called to be vehicles of the gospel. And so the focus, you know, sometimes when we talk about life, of course, it's easy to go to, and rightly we should go to Psalm 139 and Genesis, where we see, you know, in Genesis God created man and woman. Psalm 139, it says that he knitted us together in our mother's womb. Those are go-to scripture for the pro-life movement. Last year in a lot of my messages, I was talking about the woman at the well and how Jesus gave her value, looked at her as a image bearer and not as a commodity or somebody that could be used, and how that translates to the work that we do at Hope. And this year, what I'm trying to do is point us to being vehicles of the gospel. And if we're vehicles of the gospel, if that is our focus, then we'll get the pro-life movement right. Well, our stance will be correct, because we see everything through a biblical lens. We see everything through a kingdom mind instead of a worldly mind. And so that is that's what we're discussing. That's what I'll be discussing this weekend. It's what I discussed this past weekend at Ignition Church. And again, thank you to Pastor Hunter and his team for having us out there and giving us the opportunity to speak and have that conversation with his folks. And then this past week we were with Knox City Worship, and if you're familiar with them, maybe you are, maybe you're not. It's a group of believers that get together once a quarter. So they get together four times a year, and they just have a worship night. And each time they meet, they focus on a local ministry. And we were blessed that this past week they focused on Hope Resource Center. And so I was able to speak briefly to the 200 plus in attendance and hear some amazing music. We heard a message from one of the pastors over at North Star Church. We had prayer time with another pastor from City Hills Church, and just all denominations, tons of churches represented, and young people from college and people that were in the business world, all kinds of people represented there. And just a great moment to come together and worship together as we all look to our Creator. And so that was a great time last Friday night. So today what I want to do is we're going to cover a number of topics that have to do with some legislation that has come up across the country, some legislation that has been passed, some legislation that ultimately the courts have decided on and in favor of, and legislation that's coming here in the state of Tennessee that is looking to officially defund Planned Parenthood completely with tax dollars. And so I know that I talk on here a number of times about we don't put our hope in the courts, we don't put our hope in legislation, but it is important that when legislation occurs and when conversations are happening with our political leaders, that we cover that here so that you can see it from our standpoint, what that looks like for pregnancy centers, what that looks like for the overall pro-life movement. And so I briefly spoke on this last week when I was discussing the Supreme Court case that's coming up with NIFLA, which is the organization that we're a part of at Hope Resource Center. And Tom Glesner joined me on last week's show. If you didn't get a chance to listen to that, again, you can hear that on iTunes at with our podcast or at our website, investinghope.com. But we briefly talked about, but not in great detail, the pain-capable bill that stalled in the Senate. And so I want to kind of give you my thoughts on this, and then we'll go we'll go from there. So the Pain Capable Unborn Child Protection Act made its way to the Senate last week with very little hope of passage. Now, our prognostications were correct as we watched a filibuster and a debate that ultimately stymied the bill from ever making it to the floor for a vote. The bill would amend the federal code and make it a crime for anyone to perform or attempt to perform an abortion if the age of the fetus is 20 weeks or more. Violators would be subject to a fine and or up to 5 years in prison. Now, this bill offered exceptions for life of the mother, rape, and incest as well. Of course, as always, we see there that the only ones willing to compromise in this conversation is the pro-lifers. The genesis of this bill is based in science. Science that gave us ultrasound imaging, surgeries in utero, and earlier viability for premature births. This is probably a shock to some as the narrative around this piece of legislation paints its authors as religious zealots, women haters, and regressive. Fighting this bill defies logic and reason. Oftentimes, when defending my pro-life stance, I am met with the, well, what about life of the mother, rape, and incest argument? I am pro-life in every case, but this law even carved out exceptions to meet these demands and to compromise with those that see abortion as a useful option in these rare cases. The filibuster and the attack on those that would dare support this legislation further prove the motives of the abortion lobby. They have hidden behind the women's health motif for far too long. Their motive is clear at this point. It is not about helping women. No, it is about pushing abortion on demand for any reason at any time. Science, typically championed by progressives, is on the side of life. Doctors are using anesthesia now when performing surgery in utero because we now have proof that babies can, in fact, feel pain as early as 15 weeks. Ultrasound images now show us that babies stretch, recoil, and suck their thumbs at 20 weeks. Science and research has also shown us that at 20 weeks gestation, a baby can see light, hear sounds, and swallow. We must also mention that on top of all of this, the baby also has a heartbeat, its own DNA in 10 fingers and 10 toes. Opposing this legislation is anything but progressive. Opposing this legislation aligns the U.S. with the likes of North Korea and China. We, the shiny city on a hill, are in the dark ages when it comes to abortion. There are citizens walking around today that were born at 20 weeks. We have advanced in technology and medicine to a point where we should be doing more to protect life, not destroy it. This legislation would have amended our federal statute to illustrate this progress, but unfortunately, we still have a number of leaders in D.C. that refuse to allow those in the womb to benefit from the progression being made on their behalf. The vote this week didn't surprise me, but it still hurts. It hurts to see so many blinded by political posturing and unwilling to admit when their policy ideas have been proven to be wrong by science, research, and logic. These uphill battles are customary in our movement, but I believe a new day is coming as more are starting to see what science has proven to be true. It is beyond time for my generation to stand for a generation lost to abortion and generations to come. This Senate vote, though disappointing, will not curtail our work to see abortion unlawful and unthinkable in a civilized society. So let's get to work. So that's our heart at Hope Resource Center. Is, yes, we pay attention. We understand that things are going on outside the walls of Hope with legislation and abortion. But that doesn't stop us. That doesn't change our hope for a future, that would celebrate life. This past weekend, I had a conversation with a young man that was in his mid-20s, about life and abortion. And it was interesting because he disagreed with me pretty aggressively, not with tone, but definitely disagreed with my points and my beliefs when it came to abortion. And his argument was, we are for men to stand up for life and to say that abortion is wrong, we are exercising power over females. Now, obviously, I disagree with that. But it's interesting that we were able to have a conversation, at times animated, him and myself. We both got a little animated as we had this conversation. As frustration from my point of view came as he wasn't grasping what I was saying. And frustration, of course, from his point of view of the same thing, that I wasn't grasping what he was saying. But if more of those conversations would occur, we would see a change. You see, because I challenged him, and he challenged me, and I thought quite a bit about our conversation, and I pray that he has thought quite a bit about our conversation. And there were times in our discussion where I saw the look on his face of, okay, I haven't thought of that. Maybe I need to think of that a little bit more. Now, I may not have convinced him. I may not have converted him. I may not have reached him. But one thing he does know is I'm passionate about this work and life. One thing he knows is I'm not an angry person. I'm not doing this because I'm bitter. I'm doing this because I truly believe that there's life in the womb. I'm doing this because I truly believe that abortion has left destruction in its wake, not with just babies in the womb, but those that made the decision to abort. We see this day in and day out at Hope when patients come to us and say, I've had an abortion and I will never do that again. And I think about it every single day. So the line of thought that says abortion has no lasting effects on those that choose it, well, we just know that not to be true. We see it every day. The lasting effects. And so when we see pieces of legislation come before Congress simply saying, hey, at 20 weeks, there are some signs, some studies that show that a baby can feel pain. Through our progress of technology and research, we know a lot about a baby at the 20-week mark. We know now that when doctors perform surgery in utero, that they provide anesthesia for the baby. Why? Because they may feel pain. So if that wasn't a life, if that baby didn't feel pain, why would you give it anesthesia? Just do what you have to do. If that wasn't a life, if it wasn't a person, why are we performing surgery on it? Why would you perform surgery on a clump of cells or a blob of tissue? Why would you perform surgery? A medical doctor, a human medical doctor, why would they perform surgery on something that isn't a life? Well, see, that would require you to use logic. Logic tells you that if a doctor is performing surgery on a patient, that patient is a life. And so we call for these, we stand behind these pieces of legislation because ultimately what it does is it celebrates life. It simply says, look, science has brought us to a point where we know what's going on at 20 weeks. Can we not, as a society and culture, say that abortion should not be allowed at this point? And even in this case, in this piece of legislation, they said, except for in rape, incest, and life of the mother. And if you look at the polls across the country, most Americans are saying, yes, we need this piece of legislation. But the abortion lobby is strong. It's loud. And so it silences all those that would stand for life. And we'll talk more about that when we come back.
Know where the road ends, but we're having fun.
So as we look at things that are going on around the country, around this state, when it comes to life, I think it's important that we see this as a, first off, we see this as positive news, that conversations are being had, legislation is being brought up, debates are being had. You know, even when I came home on Sunday and I told my wife, I texted her and I said, I'm going to be a little bit late because, I got stopped by someone and we're having, a pretty lengthy conversation on life and abortion. My wife texted me back and said, really, that means people are listening. And so as I go around and speak, I think at times we assume, rightly or wrongly, that when we're at it, when we're speaking to a church, when we're speaking to an audience, that we're preaching to the choir. But what we also know is people have opinions and they have thoughts. And so what I have seen is in my conversations, you know, people are now coming up and not really challenging necessarily, but asking, hey, what about this? Or what about in this case? Or have you thought about this? Or here's what I've been thinking. And so what it does mean is people are starting to say, okay, we need to have this conversation. We need to form opinions. We need to not just run to political corners, but have a conversation. And so those are positive things. And then this week, what was interesting, it was in the state of Tennessee, Representative Jimmy Matlock and 20 other legislators in Nashville held a press conference. And here, this is from an article that was written about it. In a press conference held the same day he filed a bill to put an end to Tennessee tax dollars funding abortion clinics, State Representative Jimmy Matlock appeared with Senate sponsor Mike Bell and debunked the narrative that Tennessee abortion providers are fully defunded. The fact is, Matlock said, accompanied by 20 legislators, explained to members of the news media, through the form of TennCare reimbursements, abortion providers still receive some state taxpayer money. Through the required 90-10 federal-state match, over $1 million has been paid to these facilities over the past 6 years, according to Matlock. It's our money, so we should have a say at where it goes, Matlock said. House Bill 2251 instructs the Commissioner of Finance and Administration to seek a Medicaid waiver under the current TennCare 2 waiver to be able to exclude providers who perform elective abortions from receiving taxpayer dollars. We argue that these dollars do in fact support abortion clinics and therefore abortion. As such, Matlock vowed, we will see this bill through and end taxpayer support of abortion facilities. The House bill has 22 co-sponsors, including Speaker Beth Harwell, who spoke of her longstanding pro-life position in support of the bill, confirming that the bill would in no way affect the availability of affordable health care, including mammograms, prenatal care, and every other type of medical need for low-income women. Harwell headed off to typical opposition by saying that we as Republicans are 100% in support of women's health. Senator Bell, contacted several weeks before by Representative Matlock about carrying the bill, expressed his appreciation for the current Trump administration, and then they go on and on and on. One thing to note was it wasn't just Republicans standing at that press conference. It was also Democrats, as a couple were there standing and saying, this bill needs to be passed. And so I bring that up just to show that conversations are being had at the state level as well as the national level. And so why is that important? Well, it's important because tax dollars are your dollars. They're my dollars. And so there are things that our tax dollars may go to that you don't completely agree with. Maybe you're a, you know, strong libertarian and you're saying, well, I don't understand why they go to this or why they go to that. But when it comes to abortion, I think it's clear. And now the abortion lobby would argue no tax dollars go to abortion. You know, that there's already a law in the books that doesn't allow tax dollars to pay for abortion. But what I would say is, well, but if tax dollars go to an abortion clinic, yes, they have budgets and they have all these things, but ultimately that money is going to help them provide more abortions. It's just logic. That's how budgets work. And so even in my home, okay, so we bring in money, we put it in the bank account. Now we may say, well we're not going to, That doesn't help us do bad things, but if we take that money, or if that frees up money to allow us to do bad things, then all the money goes in the same pot. So ultimately, if tax dollars are going to abortion clinics, then tax dollars are being used, at the very least, to help abortions continue. And in the state of California, you have it even further. In the state of California, you actually have tax dollars providing abortions. So not just going to abortion clinics, but in California, you can go and you can get an abortion and the state will pay for it. So tax dollars are paying for that. And so the conversation that's being had in Nashville now, and Representative Matlock and others are saying, look, we thought that we had defunded all of abortion clinics. But he did some digging, investigating, and it's clear that what he is saying is $1 million. Is still going to abortion clinics, and he wants to see an end of that. And I applaud him for that decision. And so as we think through our stance, as we think through where we stand on the issue, it's okay to say, and I say this often, that we need to be engaged in the political process and understanding what pieces of legislation are coming forward. And in doing that, we continue our work at Hope Resource Center. And so we continue to partner with pregnancy centers. We continue to see a movement happen on the ground level, right? So on the at the grassroots or the ground level, what that looks like is partnering with pregnancy centers like Hope Resource Center. What it looks like is having a conversation like I had this weekend with someone that didn't agree with me, but being able to speak to that person without getting overly angry, without wanting to fight them or anything like that, and simply stating what I believe are the facts. And hearing them out as well, hearing their concerns, and having that conversation. As we do that, what we will begin to see, as we're starting to see already, is we see the polls starting to change. So now when you poll the American people and say, do you believe that abortion should be allowed at any reason, at any time? And the vast majority of Americans say no. There needs to be some type of regulation when it comes to abortion. When you look at the polls that say, should we outlaw abortion at 20 weeks? Right at half of Americans say, yes, there needs to be some legislative action put in place. But what you find is, even though the polls say that, we don't see that happening in D.C. just yet. But it will occur as more and more pro-life candidates start to step up, regardless of what party they're in. Because there are pro-life Democrats, there are pro-life Republicans, there are pro-life libertarians. And so as we see more and more people willing to boldly say, look, this is not a good place to be for our country. This is not a good place to be for a state. We are not keeping good company with other people around the world when it comes to this issue. And so those are the things that are happening. And then what that does is it gives pregnancy centers boost morale when we can see, okay, there are a lot of people that stand with us. There are a lot of people that partner with us. And then we're able to look at our patients who, as I've said before, our patients, they're not paying attention a lot of times to the legislation and to the pro-life discussions. And so that's where we meet them. We step in there and we say, how can we help you in this moment? Again, we don't sit down with them and say, did you know that there's legislation in Nashville? Did you know that there's legislation in D.C. that's seeking to outlaw abortion at 20 weeks? We're not having those conversations with patients, because they're not concerned about that right now. They're concerned about their unplanned pregnancy. They're scared. They're nervous. They need support. They need help. And so we're able to do that. And our staff, I'm blown away at the love our staff has for the patients. That even in the messiest of situations, when fear can be brought even to our staff, that their ultimate care and goal is still to serve the young ladies that are coming in our doors. We saw that last week. I won't go into detail, but I was blown away at the staff as a really messy situation was occurring. And as we had a conversation about what we needed to do, all of them kept saying, we need to serve this patient the best we can. How can we do that? How can we make sure she's still taken care of? How can we make sure that she's loved well? And that's what our staff does every single day. How can we love this city better? When all the mess is going on with our families and we have all these outside things that are happening and sickness and everything going on in our families, they get to work every single day and they seek to serve those that walk in the doors. And you help us do that. We'll be back in a sec. So we say, only a cover up. So we go from legislation to a court case in Ohio that the Ohio Supreme Court on Tuesday upheld a state order to close Toledo's only abortion clinic for failing to follow state law, and rejected a challenge from Cleveland's preterm clinic over the same law. The court ruled 5-2 to overturn lower court rulings that said state restrictions on abortion clinics were unconstitutional, but the court did not rule on the constitutionality of the law. Department of Health revoked Capital Care Network's license in 2014 because its hospital transfer agreement with the University of Michigan in Ann Arbor did not comply with the department's 30-minute transport time standard. Capital Care Network sued the state, arguing a 2013 law barring clinics from obtaining transfer agreements with a public hospital created an undue burden on women seeking abortions. Two lower courts sided with Capital Care Network, concluding the regulation was an undue burden on a woman's right to abortion access. Those courts also found the transfer agreement law, which was inserted into a wide-ranging state budget bill, violated the state constitution's single-subject rule. The state's highest court did not examine the constitutional issues. Because the department had authority to revoke Capital Care's license based on the failure to comply with the administrative rule requiring a written transfer agreement with a nearby hospital, it is not necessary to reach those constitutional issues, Justice Torrance O'Donnell wrote in a majority opinion. And so, again, to kind of go a little bit further into the weeds on this, abortion clinics in Ohio are classified as ambulatory surgical facilities and have to follow the same rules as laser eye treatment centers and plastic surgery clinics. Each must have an agreement with a hospital willing to accept a transfer patient for care after treatment at the surgical facility. The University of Toledo Medical Center did not renew its transfer agreement with Capital Care Network in 2013 in light of a GOP-backed state budget bill provision banning agreements from public institutions. Capital Care Network went 5 months without an agreement before negotiating one with the University of Michigan Health System Hospital in Ann Arbor, and that is 52 miles from the clinic. The Ohio Department of Health in 2014 revoked the clinic's license because transporting a patient to Ann Arbor would take longer than the department's 30-minute standard. Since 2013, four abortion providers, including another Toledo clinic, have closed. Capital Care's network closure would leave seven abortion clinics open statewide, down from 16 in 2011. Okay, so the court decided, and in my opinion, rightly so, to uphold the law. So here's what's interesting to me. When we have the discussion on abortion in life, what are we often told as pro-lifers? We are told it's the law of the land, correct? Right. And so when somebody looks at me and says, hey, it's the law of the land, you know, deal with it. You can be pro-life all you want, but abortion is the law of the land. Now, it's interesting. My rebuttal to that is, well, slavery was the law of the land at one point. You know, at one point, the law of the land said that some people in our society could only drink from certain water fountains and could only attend certain schools and public places. But guess what? We fought against that law because that law needed to be fought against. It needed to be reformed. And so I'm often told by the abortion lobby that it's the law of the land. So when we seek to remedy that by making other laws, they get all upset about it. So what I would tell my friends in Ohio is, well, it's the law of the land. And the state law in Ohio says that public hospitals cannot have agreements with abortion clinics. That's the law of the land. The Ohio state law also says that an abortion clinic cannot have an agreement with a hospital that's more than 30 minutes away. Hey, that's the law of the land. You're just supposed to accept it, correct? You see, but having that type of conversation is using logic and reason. So you've told the pro-life movement for 40-plus years that, hey, Roe v. Wade is the law of the land. Abortion is the law of the land. Just deal with it. Sit on your hands and deal with it. But when we finally see legislation passed across states that are going to make things better for life and could possibly have an effect on abortion clinics, all of a sudden the law of the land is frustrating. And the abortion lobby doesn't like the law of the land. You see the inconsistency there? You see, I understand that the abortion, that Roe v. Wade is the law of the land. I get it. But that's not going to stop me from seeking to see that overturned. It's not going to stop me from supporting pro-life legislation across this state and this country. And I would simply say to those that are part of the abortion lobby that are upset about the law in Ohio, I would simply say, well, you can fight it in the courts. You can vote for people that are going to seek other pieces of legislation. You have that right. It is America, after all. So I say hats off to Ohio. You know, it's funny to me that we're told often that the abortion lobby is for women's health. That's, as I said in the first segment, that's been their motif for so long. That, look, this is just women's health, and if you're against abortion, then you're against women's health, which means you're against women, which means you hate women. That is what they've been telling us for so long. That's what we've been hearing on cable news. That's what we've been hearing anytime they get a platform. Yet they get upset when laws are put forward that says, look, if you're going to provide surgical abortions in your facility, you need to be ambulatory. And you need to have a partnership with a hospital just in case something goes wrong. And so that patient is going to be taken care of at a hospital. That's not a stretch. As you heard as I was reading that article, you know, laser eye places have the same requirement. Other medical offices have the same requirement. Why? Because they're performing surgeries. And sometimes things go wrong in that surgery, and the patient could need to get to a hospital soon. So are you really celebrating women's health when you say, look, we don't need to be ambulatory? Sure, we provide surgical abortions. And sure, sometimes during those abortions, things go really bad, and the patient could be hurt or could die. But why do we need to be 30 minutes within a hospital? Why do we need to have an agreement? Well, I mean, to me, if you truly loved women and were for women's health, then wouldn't you want to protect her health? And so those are logical laws, but those logical laws hurt the narrative of the abortion lobby. And it frustrates them because, well, this is going to make it harder to perform abortions. And why does it always go back to that? It always goes back to that because they're making tons of money off of abortions. These are the same people that probably would have a lot to say about capitalism. They would have a lot of issues about capitalism. But when it comes to how much money they can make off abortions, they love them some capitalism. And so remember, when you hear the argument and when you hear them try to paint it as women's health, it isn't about that. Because if it was, they would take it upon themselves to be ambulatory. They would take it upon themselves to have partnerships. They would take it upon themselves to create policies that would protect that patient just in case something goes wrong. But instead, they don't. Instead, they open up their clinics in low-income areas, and they take money from low-income people, and they keep them in poverty as they take their child from them and as they provide abortions. That's not women's health. So a lot of things happening around the country, around our state for life, and I think it's important, and we discuss that today. One thing I want to talk about as we finish up today is our annual banquet is happening on April 26th. This year it's going to be at the Holiday Inn at the World's Fair Park downtown. It's a beautiful, I don't know if you've been there since the renovations, it's a beautiful hotel, and the space that we're going to be in is gorgeous. It's going to be a great night. And so that's April 26th. Registration is open. You can learn more about that at investinghope.com. You can go to our Facebook page, Instagram page. You can find the links to register. Maybe you're listening, you're saying, you know what, I want to host a table. You can do that. Reach out to us. My email is andrew@knoxvillehope.com. We'd love to connect you. Maybe you're listening, you're saying, hey, I own a business, I'd love to sponsor the banquet, you know, send me an email. We'd love to talk to you about that as well. Or maybe you just want to attend. You don't want to sponsor a table or host a table or sponsor the event, but you do want to be there in attendance and hear about what we have for you at Hope Resource Center and hear from our past patient and her story and kind of see a vision of what's going on and what we have planned in the future. We'd love for you to be there. Again, April 26th. It's going to be a fun night. So go to our website, investinghope.com, and register for that. Invite your friends. We'd love to see you. Like I said earlier, this Saturday I'll be at Seventh Day Christian Assembly out on Alcoa, and then off of Alcoa, and then I will be at Calvary Baptist this coming Sunday, and love to see you there. And love to talk to you, and I'll be providing the message discussing life and hope, and we'll be diving into what the scripture has for us in terms of what Peter, Peter walking on water and sinking, but keeping his eyes on Jesus and the importance of that, and how we are vehicles for the gospel. That is what this life movement is about, is getting the gospel to the nations, and we're the vehicle for the gospel. So God is using us to share the good news, and in that process, we are standing and celebrating life as we do at Hope Resource Center. So hopefully I'll see you at those churches. And then there's a missions event going on at Sevier Heights in the next couple weeks. We'll be at that as well. Finishing up February very strong and speaking at a number of different churches. I was blessed last week to also speak at a chapel at King's Academy over in Seymour, and that was a great time being with some middle school and high school students, and again talking about life, talking about hope, talking to them now to point them to, hey, we need to be standing. You're the generation that's going to see a change, and so step into that now. See how you can interact, how you can engage, how you can make a difference in the lives of your student of your fellow students and of your city and ultimately your state, your country, your world. So always thankful for the opportunities to do that. Obviously thankful each week to do this and talk about hope as we interview and talk to a number of different advocates from across the country on the life issue and how important that is and the work that's being done. Again, in March, I'll be going back to D.C. To stand with a number of pregnancy centers for a big, big case that's happening at the Supreme Court with NIFLA and the abortion or the law in California that NIFLA and Alliance for Defending Freedom and pregnancy centers are fighting against, because in California they're forcing pregnancy centers, Christian pregnancy centers, to refer out for abortion. And that goes against our constitutional rights. That goes against our First Amendment rights. And so we're going to fight it. And the Supreme Court has agreed to hear the case. We believe we're going to win this case, but we would appreciate your prayers. You can go to NIFLA's website, and you can just Google NIFLA, and that's National Institute for Family Life Advocates, and you can just Google. They have a prayer, a 24-hour prayer event that's going on between now and the court case. And so if you want to be a part of that, please be praying for them. Again, I'll be joining other directors and other centers there in D.C., to stand up and give voice to our movement. And it's going to be a great opportunity. We're going to have a platform that we haven't had before, I hope, where we get to truly articulate the work that's being done in the pregnancy center world. And so as the abortion lobby and many folks would say, all we do is manipulate people, we're going to have an opportunity to stand up and truly tell what we do and how we serve and how we love women and how we are there for them during some of their darkest moments, and without any judgment, without any shame, but there for them to support and be there for them. So be praying for that. That's going to be in March, and be praying that the judges would see it what we would call the right way and do the right thing in this case, so that we could protect pregnancy centers not just in California, but protect pregnancy centers all across this country. Because if this law is upheld, then you immediately, there are certain states in the union that are going to pass this law. So if this law is upheld, it could mean a lot of negative things for pregnancy centers across this country. And ultimately, it'll be it'll hurt the First Amendment, our First Amendment rights that we all have, whether you're Christian or not. And this is just something that we can't stand for or stand against. Obviously, there's not laws that are compelling or forcing abortion clinics to refer to pregnancy centers. And I wouldn't call for that law. As opposed as I am to abortion, it's not the state's right to force them to do something that they are against. Now if Roe v. Wade's ultimately overturned, then what happens? Then that goes back to the state. So state by state, you will see that states start putting in laws to outlaw abortion or you know, however that looks. It just depends on the state. And so, but in this case, what you have is in California, you have a state that is forcing a pregnancy center, a Christian organization, to do something that goes directly against their religious beliefs. And that should not be okay in any form or fashion. And so pray for us. That case is in March. If you want to learn more about Hope, you can at investinghope.com. You can follow us on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter. We're on all those places. We would obviously appreciate your prayers. We are embarking on our 21st year of operation, and the Lord's been good to us. And as we continue to build partnerships in our city with churches and with businesses and individuals, we would just love for you to join in that. So if you want to partner with us, you can financially at investinghope.com. You can pray for us. You can become a mentor. You can help us out with baby showers. You can help us out with a number of different things. And we would welcome that as you seek to impact your city for life. And you can do that at Hope Resource Center, and we would certainly appreciate that. In the next few weeks, hopefully we're going to have some more guests on, probably a pastor or two, and then some folks across this country that are doing great work on the life issue, and have some good conversations on how we are moving forward. What does that look like? Are we, I believe we're seeing a shift in the attitude, a shift in the thinking of the populace, but do other people agree with me, or are we seeing a shift in the wrong way? And so I guess it all depends on what kind of glasses you're wearing. And if you, but I do believe that we're going in the right direction. I do believe that we're making a difference. And I do believe that more and more people are standing for life and are seeking to see something done about abortion in our country. And so we're moving there. We have a number of different candidates that are running here in the state for governor that are pro-life and that want to do more for adoption, want to do more for pregnancy centers, want to do more to see life celebrated. So those are all positive things. As I have conversations with pastors, I'm seeing more and more pastors that are passionate about the work that's being done, not just at Hope Resource Center, but passionate about showing their congregation that life has value and that life matters. So that's what we're going to do here every single week, is talk about that. Go to our website, investinghope.com, to learn more. Listen to this podcast at investinghope.com, also on iTunes and any other place where podcasts can be found. We'll talk to you next week. Down the path of forgiveness, salvation's waiting.